welcome back to Case Closed. Our weekly hour of mystery and crime begins with the adventures of Philip Marlowe this week. We'll hear the Good Neighbor Policy from July 28, 1951. After that, it's Dragnet and the Big Building. That episode aired June 14, 1951.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. And those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or the grave. There's no other end. But they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Good Neighbor Policy.
The day was hot and sticky. The city wore it like a wet shirt. To make things worse, there was a xylophone playing somewhere in the building, and that started me thinking about my neighbors. Mostly, I was thinking two things about them. One, I didn't know any of them. And two, I'd like to shake the hand of the fellow that banged that xylophone day and night and break it. Not a very neighborly thought, but then it had been one of those days. You know the kind that prompts the neighbors to set the dogs on each other. Yeah, but now the sun had called it day. The wind had switched from the desert to the ocean. I was figuring I'd be a better friend to man and woman if I took a long, cool shower. Well, there's got to be some legal way to kill xylophone players. Oh, no, big finish yet. Yes?
Your name Marlowe? Phil Marlowe?
Yeah, that's right.
I live two apartments down the hall. You got a call on my phone.
I got a call on your phone?
Look, the call's there. I'm a busy guy. You want it or don't you?
Well, sure I want it.
Okay, come on.
All right. I didn't catch your name.
No, you didn't. In here.
Yeah.
Phone's over there on the desk. Snap it up, will you?
Yeah, sure. Regular charmer, this fella. Hello?
Phil, it's Ann.
Oh, hiya, honey.
Something must be wrong with your phone. I keep dialing your number and getting a very unpleasant little man.
Yeah, he's not so little. What's on your mind?
Oh, it's out tonight, Phil.
Oh, no.
Beanie sprained her ankle a little while ago, and I'll have to fill in for her at the hospital tonight.
It doesn't.
What?
Nothing. We'll do it again, huh?
Soon, I hope, Phil. Call me tomorrow?
Yeah, sure. Goodbye, honey.
Bye, Phil.
The lady says she keeps dialing my number and getting you. I'll report it.
Yeah, why don't you?
That's what I said. Oh, packing for a trip?
In between phone calls for you, yeah.
Look, it's only been one, and I said I'm sorry. What do you want, blood?
Leave.
Thanks, neighbor. Like I said, it had been hot all day. I wasn't getting any cooler exchanging pleasantries with Laughing Boy. Back in my own apartment, I mixed myself a tall, cool drink and thought about Anne, who was neither. I just about decided on that shower again when I remembered about calling the phone company. I reached for the phone, and just as I did... Hello?
Art, this is Rena. Listen, Ernie's crossed us. I can't talk now. I'll pick you up in 10 minutes. We'll clear out alone.
Hey, look, I...
10 minutes, Art. Be ready.
Sure. Yeah, I'll be ready, baby. Oh, my name isn't Art. And it isn't. Oh, well, one good turn and all that. Oh, no. Hey, Laughing Boy. Come on, open up, will you? I got a message for you. Come on, answer the door. Anybody home?
My, we're being rather boisterous out here, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I guess he's not home, huh?
It would almost appear that way, wouldn't it?
Yes, I guess it would, yeah.
You're apartment 6, aren't you? Philip Marlowe, is it?
Yeah, I am.
Miss Garrity. Oh. Miss Adelaide Garrity. Rather a nice name, don't you think?
Well, yeah, I do, Miss Garrity.
I'm apartment 2.
Are you really? Well, apartment 2.
I've passed you ever so many times in the hall or coming in and out of the door, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just never felt that I'd known you somehow.
No, I suppose not. But then, you see,
I often say to Mrs. Evans, she's apartment 1. Isn't it shameful, I say, that we don't know our own neighbors anymore? Here we are, under the same roof, as it were, and yet, what do we share with each other, really?
The utility?
Oh, but that seems so little. Why, except for Mrs. Evans, the Randalls, the McCombs, the Nelson girls, and... let me see now. Oh, yes. That young girl who plays with that softball team. Oh, what's her name?
Well, I really don't know.
Hattie, that's it.
Yeah.
Hattie Netherton. Well, as I say, except for those 2 or 3 people, I don't know a soul in the building.
Well, that's the way it goes, isn't it? Some days you don't know a soul. Tell me, Miss Garrity, among the people in the building you don't know, do you also not know the fellow who lives here?
Apartment 3.
Yeah, this door I've been beating on. Who's that?
You don't know. And you're making all that fuss.
Yeah, well, it does seem silly, doesn't it?
Well, I should say so. But I'm afraid I won't be much help to you there, Mr. Marlowe. He's our newest tenant, you know. Moved in less than a month ago.
Oh, well, I just thought...
No, I don't feel that I really know him at all. He's a rather a tall young man, brown hair, quite nice eyes, I've always thought.
Oh, that sounds like my
phone. I never see anyone with him, though, Something's a lone wolf type,
I guess.
Yeah,
well, look, thanks, Miss Garrity, but my
phone
now
that I think of it, I have seen someone come in with him.
Can I catch up to you again, Miss Garrity?
Whether it was man, woman, or child, I really couldn't honestly say. Mostly Mr. Minter.
Mr. Minter, well, thank you, and good night, Miss Garrity.
Well, find out.
Whoever it was, it hung up while Adelaide Garrity was telling me all she didn't know about the man named Minter. On the call before, someone named Rena had called him Art. Could be my unfriendly neighbor in apartment 3 was Art Minter. Yeah, well, that's pretty simple. Left me nowhere. Then there was Rena's message. Ernie's crossed us. I'll pick you up in 10 minutes. We'll clear out alone. Not exactly social conversation. I had a hunch about the phone call mix-up, but before I began to build a case about it, I called the chief operator at the phone company.
Chief operator?
Yeah, well, we've got a friendly little wager going here, operator. Will you settle an argument for us?
I'll try, sir.
Good. Is it possible for 2 telephone wires to get crossed in some way so that I could dial 1 number correctly and actually get the other number?
Yes, sir. That is possible.
Uh-huh.
It could happen only in the case of a slight equipment disorder. And only if the 2 numbers in question were on the party line.
Well, in other words, by dialing my number correctly, you'd get the person on my party line, and by dialing his number correctly, you'd get me. Is that it?
That's right, sir. Would you like to report such a difficulty?
No, thanks. Like I said, I just wanted you to set a little argument for us. Thanks very much.
Not at all, sir.
Well, now I knew that much. Neighbor Minter and I were on a party line, and the strange switch in calls was legitimate. Now I'd gone this far with the thing, I decided to leave the wires crossed for a while, just for laughs. And I looked at my watch. It was time to get a look at Rena. If she was coming for Minter in 10 minutes, she was due. I left my apartment, started down the hall toward his, and sure enough.
Art, it's Rena.
Oh, please, Art, hurry.
Nobody home, lady?
I'm sure he must be. I just talked with him on the phone a few minutes ago.
Oh, well, maybe he's in the shower.
Yes, maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Now, please, would you mind?
That sounds like his phone.
Yes, it does. I wonder...
Yeah, so do I.
What's that?
Nothing. I mean, if he answers it, he'll probably answer your knock, too.
Yes, I suppose he will. Now, will you please leave me alone?
Oh.
Got to be there. Got to be.
Art's apartment was far more frustrating to me than it was to Rena. I knew darn well the call was really for me. I opened the front door out of the welcome freshness, the evening breeze, and the scent of night-blooming jasmine. By the time I'd inhaled a little of both and walked out to the end of the sidewalk, Rena suddenly barged out of the building, looked desperately up and down the street, and then headed toward a car parked across the way. And her car had an Arizona license. In a minute, she drove away. Back in my own apartment, I called the chief operator again. Only this time I leveled with her about the crossed wires on my party line. After that, I took a shower and decided to end a dull day by putting in some sack time. The last conscious thought I had was Rena's urgent voice on the phone. Ernie's crossed us. I can't talk now. I'll pick you up in 10 minutes. We'll clear our load. I still didn't get it. I didn't get it the next morning either. But I got up dressed and was starting for the morning paper, which my newsboy with questionable accuracy always pegs in the general vicinity of my apartment door. Didn't quite get there, though, before... Hello?
Mr. Philip Marlowe?
Speaking.
This is the telephone company calling, Mr. Marlowe.
Oh?
The difficulty with your phone that you reported last night has been remedied. Normal service may be resumed.
Oh, fine. Thanks for calling.
We hope you haven't been unduly inconvenient.
Oh, not at all. It's been grand.
Thank you for your patience, sir.
Yeah. Well, goodbye. Well, that's that. Okay, I'm coming. Hello again.
Hey, I got another call for you on my phone. Same dame as last night, I think.
Yeah, but the phone company just
told
me...
Look, you always argue there's a call for you on my phone. I'd come on and answer.
Well, how can I resist an invitation like that? Funny, though. Wonder how that happened.
Yeah, you said that before.
Yeah, I know. I did, didn't I? Did I say before that I don't much care for xylophones? Or you?
I don't remember. I don't care.
No.
In here.
Yeah, and the phone's over there on the desk. Hey, Buster, that phone's hung up. There's no call for me. What is this?
This? This is a gun, Marlowe.
Yeah, I see it is.
You know too much, Marlowe. I don't like it when you know so much. Finish.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, a blind auction racket in which employees in a customs house have a confederate purchase a battered suitcase containing a fortune in jewels. That's what CBS Radio's gangbusters have to contend with in The Case of the Nazi Diamonds, tonight on most of these same CBS stations. Don't miss Gangbusters tonight for a suitcase full of jewels and thrills. Say, friends, the flood victims of Kansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Illinois need your help. Many are injured and homeless, and you can help to give them food, clothing, shelter, medical care. You can do your part by giving through your local chapter of the American Red Cross. Now, with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Good Neighbor Policy.
Mitter's quite nice eyes, as Adelaide Garrity had described them, were as cold and deadly as the automatic he rammed into my stomach. It was the first time I'd gotten a really close look at him. This one was too close for comfort. I had to keep looking at him, though. I knew that if I glanced away, blinked an eye, or made anything resembling a key move, he'd blast me to kingdom come. A little ahead of my time. He was dead wrong on one score, though.
You got my call from Marina last night. You know too much.
How can I know too much? I don't know anything. Now, look, Minter.
When I saw you last night, you didn't know my name. You've been asking questions around, huh? Yeah.
Well, so have I. Come on, Gumshoe, we're going to take a little walk.
Now, look, kid, you're all wrong. Will
and
you
after
take...
we take that little walk, we're going to take a little ride. You can tell me all about how wrong I am as long as you can talk. Let's get going.
Okay, okay.
Remember, Marlo, you're just going to walk down the hall and out of the building with me. No funny stuff. This gun staying right in your
back. Hank, I see what you mean.
And the dawn comes up like the... Why, it's Mr. Marlowe.
Oh, Miss Garrity.
And Mr. Minter, I believe. We're up early, aren't we?
Yes, we are. A little too early, if you ask me.
Oh, have you the hiccups, Mr. Marlowe? If you do, I know the best cure. Just put your hands up high over your head.
No, I don't have hiccups, Miss Garrity.
Oh, then perhaps it was Mr. Minter.
No, lady, I don't have hiccups either.
Well, someone hiccuped, and it wasn't me. Oh, but no matter, I just came out for my paper. I won't keep you gentlemen. I know you must be off somewhere. And it's such a lovely morning. I don't believe it's as warm today, do you?
Seems warmer to me somehow.
No, I don't believe it is. Do you, Mr. Minter?
Look, lady, we're in a hurry.
Well, I'm sure I'm not keeping you. I must say I was just trying to do the neighborly thing, that's all.
Yeah,
I was saying to Mrs. Evans just the other day, what happened to the old-fashioned good neighbor policy?
Look, lady.
And this little incident this morning is certainly answer enough for me. It's gone. That's where it is. Gone.
Get moving, Marlo.
Miss Garrity, you're the one who plays that delightful xylophone,
why,
Marlo.
Yes. But, oh, you can see it from the doorway here.
Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm so glad you enjoy it, Mr. Marlo.
Oh, I do. I wanted to tell me, would you... Oh, I know it's a lot to ask.
Play something for you.
Yes.
Mr. Marlo, come in.
You make one move for her door.
I'm going to kill her too, maybe? She's right in front of me.
Well, come in, gentlemen. Or aren't you a music lover, Mr. Minter?
Sure I am. It's just that I'm
Let me get your paper for you, Miss Garrity!
Get inside your apartment, Miss Garrity, quick!
Not this time you won't, Minter.
Stay over on that wall, Miss Garrity. Don't get near the door.
Well, what on earth possessed you, Mr. Marlowe? Why, you struck him in the face with my paper.
Yeah, I did. Wait a minute. Shh. Can you see the street from your windows, Miss Garrity?
Yes, but...
Oh. Here's your paper. Sorry, it's wrinkled.
Oh, thanks very much. Well, I'm afraid I still don't understand your behavior, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, he beat it, all right. He'll get lost in that traffic in no time.
What will Mr. Minter think? You're striking him that way.
I've got a mean streak. Hey, wait a minute. Let me see that headline.
Well, I'm sure I don't know what's in it, if you remember. I haven't had
Will
a
you
chance
let me see it a minute,
think...
please?
Please.
Oh, yeah. Man murdered an investment holdup. Ernest Tolan, 38, employee at Henshaw Investment Company, was found shot to death when the company opened its doors this morning. Upwards of $50,000 in cash and securities missing from the safe. Police believe Tolan worked late last night and drove the 15th to lose the company safe. Officials say police were attempting to locate Tolan's widow, Mrs. Rena Tolan, whom neighbors saw leaving the house with a suitcase.
Wow!
Ernie and Rena.
Friends of yours, Mr. Marlowe.
No, but Minter's right. I do know too much.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Marlowe, but I don't feel up to playing for you right now.
What?
No, this morning has gotten off to such a peculiar start. I'm just not in the mood for the xylophone.
Oh, I know how you feel. Don't give it another thought, Miss Garrity. Ever again. I called the landlady when I got back to my own apartment to see if she knew anything about Minter, like where he worked. She was good enough to be out of town. I even went back to Miss Garrity's, but she'd already hit the trail to share the morning's excitement with any of a dozen people, including probably that girl who played with the softball team. But old Mr. McWilliams, the janitor, was bringing up the morning mail. Morning, Mr. Mack. How's the mail situation?
12B has two packages again.
Again? Mm-hmm. How about me?
Well, sir, you don't even rate an advertisement this morning. I'll tell you. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you can't win all the time, huh?
No.
Yeah.
Tell me, how about Mr. Minter?
How's that?
Mr. Minter, you know, he's in apartment 3. He asked me to pick up his mail if there is any.
Sure. If you can carry it all. Just this postcard.
Oh, I can manage, yeah. Well, thank you.
It's from his mother in Tucson.
Really?
Mm. They're all well.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Nice to see you again, Mr. Mack.
Same here. Same here. The old saying.
Yeah?
Is it hot enough for you?
It was. And Mr. Mack was right. And his family were all well, except for the return address in Tucson. There wasn't a lead on the whole postcard. But who puts leads on postcards? I took the card back to the apartment with me and called a questionable character I knew in Tucson and told him to find out all he could about Art Minter, quick. Then I remembered about Rena's car having an Arizona license and asked him to check her. Yeah, and Ernest Tolan, too. Called back in an hour.
Well, he's got no record, Marlo. This Minter guy asked me to check out. Oh, only get this.
What?
About a year ago, he gets divorced by his wife. You hear?
Yeah, go ahead.
And right away, she hops over to Mexico with this Tolan fella you ask about and marries him.
Rena did?
Wait a minute. I got it written down here, so. Yeah, Rena. Rena, that's her name. Yeah. Now, Tolan was with an investment outfit here in Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he transferred to L.A. a month ago.
Yeah, that checks. What about Minter? Find out where if he works here, will you? If he does, that is.
Oh, yeah, Marlo, this will rock you.
What?
He works at the Hollywood Library.
Hollywood Library?
Honest, his old lady told me.
It rocked me, all right. The whole thing did. Ernest Tolan, now dead, had been set up as a pigeon a year ago back in Arizona. Only at some point yesterday, he got wise and decided to do the investment job alone. Trouble was, Rena didn't get to Art with the news in time. She got to me. Now even the law couldn't locate Rena. And the last time I saw Minter, he didn't act like a fellow who was heading for the Hollywood Library. Well, you never know. I started out into the hall, observed gratefully that Miss Garrity's xylophone was stilled, if only for the moment. But when I got about even with Minter's door, something happened very like a familiar song starting all over again. Was Minter's phone ringing. I listened at his door. There was no move from inside to answer the ring. And something told me here was another lock that needed springing. Yeah?
Art, it's Rena. Where have you been?
Out for a while.
Are you all right? You don't sound it.
Yeah. I just wondered. Where are you?
I'm in a... It sounds so funny. Is someone there?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, not the police, Art.
No, neighbor. You talking.
Oh, because you can't. All right, I will. I'm at the Bellflower in Ventura. If you call here, ask for Mrs. Guthrie. That's me.
Got it.
You got everything, didn't you? When you... Well, I mean... About Ernie. You're still going to split with me, aren't you?
Yeah, sure.
I was afraid after I ran out. But you understand, don't you? You weren't home.
Skip it, huh?
All right. Art... You get off work at 4, don't you? Nothing's happened about that.
4, yeah.
Well, come up here as soon as you can after that. Well, just hurry, Art, please.
I will.
Bye.
Bye. Excuse me, but can you...
Please. Loud.
You. Lost my head, I'm sorry. Can you tell me where I can find Mr. Minter, please?
Mr. Arthur Minter?
Yeah.
In the stacks on the mezzanine. That stair ahead.
Thank you very much.
Not at all. And walk as quietly as you can, please. People are reading.
You wouldn't disturb me for the world.
No one's supposed to come up here. These are files. No one's allowed here.
I was looking for something in investments.
I said no. Hello.
Take it easy, Minter. I got a message from Rena.
Yeah?
She says you killed Ernie.
Look.
Oh. Yeah, and I got a message for Rena, too. Ventura cops probably have her by now. My call, Lieutenant Matthews, did any good, and it always does. I'll kill you, Marlowe.
Hey, you're a rut. Aren't you, Minter? Come on. Where's the dough you took from Ernie and the securities? Are they in these permanent files, too? Is that why you had to show for work today?
Yeah, gum show. But you never get them on me.
Yeah, throwing books is a good idea. No!
Well, this boy's really out. Yeah? Not to be said for heavy reading.
I kept my foot on his neck till Miss Hush downstairs called Matthews. I needn't have. He didn't come to. And I waved the squad car off to headquarters from the library curb. Yeah, well, that's that. On the way back to my apartment, I got to thinking about a house with no neighbors, no xylophones, no crossed wires. No fun, either. You know, all kinds of things go on in apartment houses. All kinds of people leading all kinds of lives. What's the line? Love thy neighbor as thyself? Yeah. But most people act like they hate themselves. Oh, well. There's got to be some legal way to kill xylophone players.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Kathleen Height. Featured in the cast were Hi Averback as Art Minter and Jane Morgan as Miss Garrity, with Vivi Janis as Anne, Dora Singleton as Rena, Parley Bear as old Mr. MacWilliams, and Gene Bates as the chief telephone operator. Gerald Moore may currently be seen in the Santana production, Sirocco. The special music for Philip Marlowe is composed by Pierre Garagank and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Be sure to listen again next week at the same time when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I did a cook's tour of the San Fernando Valley in search of a missing woman. The case had a lot of positive developments. But the clincher was a negative development. And in a camera shop.
There's fine musical listening on CBS Radio tomorrow. Don't miss Guy Lombardo Time, featuring Guy's distinctive music with vocals by visiting Janice Page. The program comes from Norfolk Naval Base, where Guy Lombardo Time entertains the Navy. Also on tap tomorrow night over most of these same CBS stations is CBS Radio's Mario Lanza Show, with Mario and Musical Company offering a special program of Jerome Kern favorites. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Just as systematic exercise builds a strong body, so does systematic saving build a strong future. Save systematically for your future and for your country's future with United States Defense Bonds. There's no safer investment in the world. Defense bonds are guaranteed by your government. So for the defense of your future, for the defense of your country's future, buy your full share, regularly, systematically, of United States Defense Bonds. This is the CBS Radio Network.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a homicide detail. A wealthy society woman in your city vanishes. 2 months pass before her disappearance is reported to the police. There's suspicion of foul play. Your job? Investigate. Webster's Dictionary. Definition of the word compare.
Compare. Examine for purpose of discovering resemblance or difference.
Now, let's compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette.
The resemblance. Fatimas are the same length as other king-size cigarettes, 85 millimeters. Fatima has the same circumference, 1 1/64 inches around.
And Fatima filters the smoke exactly the same long distance as other king-size cigarettes.
The difference. In Fatima, the difference is quality.
You see, Fatima contains the finest domestic and Turkish tobaccos superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild. You get all the advantages of extra length plus Fatima quality, which no other king-size cigarette has.
So compare Fatima yourself. Your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Buy Fatima. Best of all long cigarettes. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, February 8th. It was foggy in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from the office, and it was 11:23 a.m. when we got to the ninth floor of the medical dental building, room 912.
Dr. Marston?
Yes, what is it?
Police officers, doctor. Like to talk to you.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Daydreaming, I guess. I didn't hear you come in.
Well, my name's Friday, doctor. This is my partner, Sergeant Romero.
How you doing?
How do you do, gentlemen?
How do you, sir?
It's about the missing persons report on your wife. You filed it yesterday.
Yes, that's right, Sergeant. Certainly glad you came. Like to have this whole thing straightened out as quickly as possible. I want my wife back with me.
Well, we'll do everything we can, doctor. There's a few things we'd like to have you straighten out for us, if you will.
I thought I made it pretty clear in that report I filed yesterday. What is it you have a question about?
I've got a copy of the report right here. Says your wife disappeared December 9th. That's a little over 2 months ago, doctor.
Yes, that's correct. December 9th, Sunday night. We were out having dinner, and we had a little argument, and Louise left. I didn't hear from her until the following Friday. That's when she wrote me the first letter. It was from New York.
Well, weren't you a little alarmed to find out your wife had left you and gone east?
Well, I wasn't too happy about it, but we'd had a few arguments before. Always figured it did both of us good if Louise got away for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wasn't particularly worried. She has friends in New York. Would you care for a cigarette?
Not right now.
Thank you, doctor. Yeah. I've got a light for you.
Thank you.
I understand your wife didn't stay with her friends this trip, doctor.
No, apparently she didn't. However, I wasn't too concerned. She wrote me letters twice a week, and then she wrote Stanley. That's our son. He's in military school. Louise wrote to him regularly, too.
Mm-hmm. And the last letter you got from your wife was about 2 weeks ago.
Yes, sir, exactly 2 weeks ago. Had the same postmark on it, New York.
Well, have you any idea at all where she was staying back there?
That's a strange part of it, Sergeant. Louise didn't put a return address on any of the letters.
Mm-hmm.
I inquired of some of our friends back there, but none of them had seen her. Well, I suppose she was staying at a hotel. I don't know which one, though.
Well, about those letters, Doctor. Now, you're sure that they're in your wife's handwriting. You don't think they could be forgeries, do you?
It's possible, but I don't think so, Sergeant. I know my wife's handwriting.
Do you have all the letters with you, sir?
Yes, I'll have my secretary get them before you leave. She's out to lunch now. Oh, excuse me, please.
Right ahead.
Yes, Dr. Marston. Well, Miss Taylor. Oh, yes, I'm glad you reminded me. Thank you. I'm sorry, officers. There's a denture I have to have ready for one of my patients by this afternoon. Would you mind if I go ahead and work on it while we talk here?
No, it's perfectly all right, Doctor. You go right ahead.
Do you mind stepping in the lab back here?
All right, fine. Go ahead, ma'am.
Sorry to interrupt everything like this. I do have to have this denture ready, though.
We understand, sir.
Doctor, you say the night your wife Louise disappeared, the two of you had an argument?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
We were having dinner out at our country club, and I guess Louise had too many cocktails. gets in a nasty mood when she drinks too much. I asked her to stop drinking. She flared up and walked out of the place.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone besides yourself see her leave?
Oh, yes, two or three couples. Friends of ours. When I found out Louise had gone off to New York, I thought, well, it was her way of teaching me a lesson. I wasn't too disturbed about it until her letters stopped coming.
Well, how about your son, Stanley? Do you know if he's still getting the letters from his mother?
No, he's not. I telephoned him up at his school. He stopped getting letters about the same time I did. Let's see, where did I put that casting ring? Oh, yes, here we are.
Then, as far as you know, Doctor, no one at all has actually seen your wife since that night at the country club when she walked out and left you.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. As I say, if I hadn't been getting those letters from her every week from New York, I would have called the police in long ago. Would you excuse me, please?
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit of oxide in this gold crown I've cast here. A little bit of acid should take care of that.
Mm-hmm. What's your theory on all this, Doctor? Your wife leaves suddenly and she goes to New York. She corresponds with you and your son, and then her letters stop coming. What do you think might have happened?
Well, frankly, Sergeant, the whole thing's a terrible family mix-up. Get this crown here out of the acid.
Well, how do you mean, Doctor, a family mix-up?
Well, just that. There's only one reason for Louise disappearing the way she has. Money. Money and that stepfather of hers. Say, would you switch on that small motor there, Sergeant? I've got to polish up this crown, get it in shape.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Thank you.
Well, what do you mean, Doctor? How does your wife's stepfather fit into all this?
Money mad. It's about the size of it. I don't know if you're aware of it, but my wife, Louise, was left a considerable amount of money by her aunt.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was a fortune, as a matter of fact. Louise's stepfather has always been trying to get his hands on it. Excuse me again.
Sure, go ahead. Well, and you think your wife's stepfather is responsible for her disappearance, is that right?
Oh, I'm not making any direct accusations, Sergeant. But 2 days ago, or 2 days before Louise disappeared, I had $80,000 in bonds signed over to her. Checked around since she's been gone, haven't been able to locate the bonds anywhere.
You think she had the bonds with her when she left?
Guess I'm sure of it. Pardon me just a moment.
Yes, go ahead.
Uh-huh. That's a fine cast with sharp margins on it.
Well, now, the $80,000 worth of bonds, Doctor, do you have any way of proving that you gave those to your wife?
Well, certainly. I have my wife's signed receipt for them. You're welcome to check it over if you like.
Mm-hmm. Just how do you think your wife's stepfather figures in there? Is there any indication he might have made a move to get the bonds?
Enough to satisfy me, yes. My secretary told me about it. Lenore Dexter, that's the girl in the reception room.
Oh, well, huh?
The night after my wife left me at the country club, that'd be December 10th, Miss Dexter was at the airport waiting for a friend to arrive on a plane. While she was waiting, she saw my wife and her stepfather cross through the waiting room and go out toward the main gate.
Mm-hmm. Your secretary's sure it was really your wife and her stepfather?
Well, that's what she told me. You're certainly welcome to talk to her yourself if you like.
Yes, and well. Now, besides the bonds, do you know of anything else of value that your wife had with her when she left?
No, I don't think so. She had her fur coat on, of course. It's expensive. She was wearing a diamond ring, anniversary gift from me, large solitaire, worth quite a bit of money. You can get the description from the jeweler. I'll give you his name.
All right, Doctor. Your wife's stepfather, we'd like to have his name and address, too.
Surely. I'll have my secretary check on both of them right now.
All right, fine.
Sergeant, you've got to find Louise. I've got to have her back with me.
Well, we'll do everything we can, Doctor. We promise you that.
I know my wife wouldn't stay away of her own free will, not this long, not at a time like this.
How do you mean, sir?
Well, let me show you. Here it is. This is the final drawing the architect made for us. What do you think of it?
It's very nice.
Yeah, it certainly is.
It's got to be our own building. 12 stories, finest in the city.
Uh-huh.
Robert A. Marston Building for professional men. Louise and I have looked forward to it for a long time.
I understand.
We settled on the final plans a week before she disappeared. Contractors will start construction in a few weeks now. There's supposed to be a great day in our lives, laying the cornerstone.
Yes, sir, I understand.
Great day. Robert A. Marston building. It's a funny thing, isn't it, officers?
How's that?
Nothing's very great unless there's somebody to share it with.
Before we left the office of Dr. Robert Marston, we talked with his secretary, Miss Lenore Dexter. She confirmed the doctor's statement that on the night after Louise Marston had disappeared from the country club, she had seen both Mrs. Marston and her stepfather at the city's international airport. She said she did not follow them. She had no idea of their destination. Dr. Marston gave us the letters his wife had written him during her absence and also his wife's signed receipt for the $80,000 worth of bonds. Each of the letters was postmarked New York, and the dates on them ranged from December 15th to March 24th. Well, Ben and I drove back to the office and put in a call to the home of the missing woman's stepfather, a Mr. William House. Then we went down the hall to the office of Don Meyer, our handwriting expert. We gave him the letters, which supposedly had been written by Mrs. Marston from New York, along with a signed receipt for the bonds and various other exemplars of her handwriting, which we had obtained from her bank. 2:50 p.m., the missing woman's stepfather, William House, arrived at the office. He was a tall, graying man, dignified, well-dressed.
It's about time the police started looking into this thing. How long does a person have to be missing before there's an investigation?
The missing report was only filed yesterday, Mr. House. If you knew your stepdaughter was gone, why didn't you report it?
I've had private detectives working on this for a month. Had them checking everything about the case.
How much luck have they had?
Frankly, not much. I still got them working on it.
Well, getting back to what we have on hand, Mr. House, how about this statement of Dr. Marston's secretary? She says she saw you with Mrs. Marston at the international airport the night after she disappeared.
It's a lie. I haven't been near that airport in 6 months. It's a lie, and I can prove it. I don't know what Marston's up to, but he isn't going to get away with it.
What do you mean by that, sir?
I think he's murdered Louise. I think he killed her and buried her somewhere. That's my honest opinion.
You sound sure of it.
I am sure of it. I knew Marston for what he was the day I met him. He's a fortune hunter, pure and simple. He's after Louise's money, and nothing's going to stop him. Nothing has stopped him.
Well, I was under the impression that Dr. Marston was wealthy before he married your stepdaughter. Isn't that right, sir?
Certainly not. He was just another poor dentist with a lot of big ideas. All this talk about putting up a building, naming it after himself. Why, Louise fought him on that constantly. He's some kind of crazy egotist.
Well, what about the $80,000 in bonds he says he signed over to Mrs. Marston?
If he told you that, he's a bigger liar than I thought.
Well, he gave us a receipt for the bonds. It was signed by his wife. Can you account for that?
Frankly, no. Either he got her signature on it by some kind of trick, or he forged it. I'm sure he never had that much money. Those bonds belong to Louise.
What about the letters Dr. Marston got from his wife? You think they were forged, too?
I'm positive they were. Don't you see, officer? It's the perfect cover-up for him.
Well, one way or the other, it's not going to take us long to find out the truth. Our handwriting man's checking over the letters and the bond receipt now. Can you fill us in at all on Dr. Marston's background, Mr. House?
Only since he's been connected with the family, since he married Louise. Say, would you give me a cigarette, please? I went off and left mine at home.
Oh, sure. Here you are.
Thank you. Thank you. I can't tell you how I feel about it, officer. I'm afraid of that man. I'm deathly afraid of him. I know he's done something terrible to Louise.
Well, how can you be so sure of it, Mr. House? You must have some basis for your opinion.
I just know, that's all, Sergeant. If Louise had just disappeared and there wasn't any question of money involved, I wouldn't be so anxious about it. But $80,000 worth of bonds, that'd be enough to tempt Marston to murder his own mother. You don't know him like I do.
Well, what do you know about him, sir? There must be something concrete.
I can tell you this much, officer. Marston's a man who is capable of murder. Now, I'm a sensible man. I don't walk up and down the street looking for murderers. But I know when we've got one in the family. That much you've got to believe. You will believe it.
Well, sir, excuse me just a minute. I'll get that. Homicide, Friday. Yeah, Don. Is that right? All of them? Right. Thank you, Don. Well, that was our handwriting man, Mr. House.
Yes?
He just finished checking the writing in those letters and on the receipt for the bonds.
What'd he say? Forgeries?
No, sir. They're genuine. Every one of them. As soon as William House left the office, Ben and I began an immediate check of his whereabouts the night after his stepdaughter, Louise Marston, had disappeared. We talked to his friends and associates, members of the staff at the club where he lived.
We found a dozen people who backed up House's claim that he was nowhere in the vicinity of the airport the night after Mrs. Marston dropped from sight. We went back and talked with Dr. Marston's secretary, Lenore Dexter. She still insisted that she had actually seen House at the airport with the missing woman. Dr. Marston and the stepfather continued to accuse each other of murder. At our request, repeated efforts were made by the New York police to locate Mrs. Marston. No luck. We checked and rechecked with the maid at the home of the missing woman. All she could tell us was that Louise Marston never returned home after leaving the country club, and also that she'd been wearing a fur coat and an expensive diamond solitaire ring. A week passed, and then 2 weeks. We stayed on it, but there wasn't much progress. The case of Louise Marston came to a virtual standstill. Wednesday, February 24th.
Hi, Joe.
Morning. Anything new?
Yeah, I think we got a break, the Marston case.
Oh, what do you got?
A maid out of Dr. Marston's home. She called first thing this morning. Said Dr. Marston had a little dinner party out there last night.
What about it?
One of the people there was Marston's secretary, that Lenore Dexter.
Oh, yeah.
She was wearing a large diamond ring.
Yeah?
Maid got a good look at the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Says it's the same one Mrs. Marston was wearing the night she disappeared.
You are listening to Dragnet, authentic cases from official police files. Now, let's look at our Fatima files.
Listed under B. Borden, Mrs. Clay Borden of Palm Springs in San Francisco. She says,
pleasing, distinctive, and really extra mild. That's the way I'd describe Fatima. It's definitely the best long cigarette.
Friends, more smokers now insist on Fatima than ever before. Because in Fatima, the difference is quality.
Quality of tobaccos. The finest domestic and Turkish varieties. Extra mild. Superbly blended. To give you a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Quality of manufacture. Smooth, round, perfect cigarettes. Rolled in the finest paper money can buy. Manufactured in the newest and most modern of all cigarette factories.
Quality, even to the appearance of the bright, clean, gold and yellow package.
Remember, Fatima gives you all the advantages of extra length, plus Fatima quality, which no other king-size cigarette has.
So if you smoke a king-size cigarette, compare Fatima.
You'll find they now cost the same. But your first puff will tell you,
ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality.
Wednesday, February 24th, 9:15 a.m. Ben and I drove out to the home of Dr. Robert Marston and talked to the maid. She told us that on the previous evening, the doctor had had a small dinner party and that one of the guests was the doctor's secretary, Lenore Dexter. The maid told us that she'd gotten a close look at the diamond ring that Miss Dexter was wearing and that she was sure it was the same ring that the doctor's wife, Louise Marston, had been wearing the night she disappeared. 10:20 a.m. We left the Marston house and headed downtown to the doctor's office in the medical dental building. The office was closed and locked. We got back in the car and drove out Sunset Boulevard to Lenore Dexter's home address. We found the secretary having breakfast alone in her two-room apartment. She explained that on Wednesdays, the doctor never opened his office before noon. We questioned her about the dinner party at the doctor's home the night before. We asked her about the diamond ring that she wore at the party. She became confused and hesitant.
Well, what about it, Miss Dexter? Was that your diamond ring you were wearing at the dinner party?
No, Sergeant, it wasn't. I guess it belongs to Dr. Marston, either him or his wife.
Well, did he give it to you as a present?
No. You see, I guess the doctor had a few cocktails before dinner. Maybe one too many. He went upstairs and came down with a ring. He insisted I wear it. He was very insistent.
Uh-huh.
I didn't want to make a scene, so I put the ring on. I gave it back to the doctor just before we left the house. My boyfriend was with me at the party. We had a terrible argument over it. He's very jealous.
Tell me, Miss Dexter, did Dr. Marston have any special reason for wanting you to wear the ring?
No. Just that he liked me and that I was pretty and I ought to have pretty things. My boyfriend didn't like him at all.
Well, had you ever seen that particular diamond ring, Miss Dexter? I mean, before last night?
Well, I don't know, Sergeant. I think so. I'm not sure.
Well, where do you think you saw the ring before?
Mrs. Marston. I think I saw her wearing it once.
Was she wearing it the night you were supposed to have seen her at the airport?
I don't know what you mean. I didn't notice the ring, but I saw Mrs. Marston at the airport.
I'd like to have you think this thing out for yourself, Miss Dexter. Mrs. Marston's been gone for almost 3 months now, and there's a strong possibility that she might have been murdered. You can make up your own mind about it, miss. If you're not involved in that disappearance, I'd advise you to tell us the truth. It might save you a lot of trouble. Miss Dexter?
You mean about my seeing Mr. House at the airport with the doctor's wife the night after she disappeared?
Yes, ma'am, that's right. You sure that's the truth?
I didn't want to get involved, Sergeant. I didn't want any part of it.
You mean you didn't see Mrs. Marston or stepfather at the airport that night that you made it all up?
I didn't make it up, Sergeant. I swear I didn't. He told me what to say. He said to do it as a favor for him.
Who's that, miss?
Dr. Marston.
We continued to question the secretary, Lenora Dexter. She confessed that Dr. Marston had directed her to tell the story about seeing Louise Marston and her stepfather, William House, at the International Airport. It was all a complete lie. She said that Marston had explained that the whole thing was just a practical joke, that it didn't mean anything. When Mrs. Marston was officially reported missing, she thought of going to the police, but Marston had frightened her out of taking any such action. The only other suspicious thing she could recall about Mrs. Marston's disappearance was a conversation between the doctor and his architect, a Mr. Harold Whitmore. He was the architect who had planned and designed the projected Robert A. Marston building for professional men. Well, the secretary told us the doctor's conversation with the architect had taken place about a month before Mrs. Marston's disappearance, and that she'd heard the doctor mention to the architect something about New York and a packet of letters. Lenora Dexter was taken downtown, where she gave us a complete signed statement. Ben and I got in the car and drove to the offices of architect Harold Whitmore over on South Hope Street. He was a tall, florid-faced man, very cooperative.
Yeah, I remember that conversation with Dr. Marston. He gave me a bunch of letters, at least a couple of dozen anyway. They were addressed to the doctor and his little boy, Stanley.
What did he want you to do with the letters, Mr. Whitmore?
He asked me if I had any friends in New York, and I said I did. Then he said he was playing some kind of practical joke on his wife and son. He gave me the letters and asked me if I'd send them to a friend in New York and have him mail them back one at a time.
You agreed to do that?
Yeah, that's right. The letters were all sealed and stamped, all in order, the way they were supposed to be mailed. I just sent him back to this friend of mine, Bob Rogers, in New York. Forgot all about it.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Whitmore, how long have you known Dr. Marston? Very long?
No, not too long, only in a business way. He wants to put up this office building of his, and I'm handling the job for him. He's sure nuts on the subject. Can't wait till we start construction on the job. I think his life depended on it.
You know much about his personal life? Where'd you first meet
him? Let's see, I think it was around October of last year. He and Mrs. Marston were building a summer place down at Malibu, and I helped out with the plans. The doctor was always hanging around there, helping out with the work whenever he could.
Uh-huh. And that's the only previous contact that you had with him, huh?
And that's about all, yeah, building the beach house. Dr. Marston thought he had some new ideas about building a new type basement in the place.
That's so?
Yeah, not a bad job on a cellar for an amateur. Used enough cement on it to sink a battleship.
Oh, just a second, Mr. Whitmore. Did Dr. Marston cement in the basement while the house was being built? Is that...
No, about a couple of months later, around the middle of December, I think.
Do you remember the date exactly? When he did the cement work?
Not exactly. About the 12th or 13th of December, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right after his wife disappeared.
Wednesday, February 24th, 1:30 p.m. Ben and I picked up Dr. Robert Marston and brought him downtown to the office. We questioned him for an hour and informed him of the evidence against him. Despite the statement of architect Harold Whitmore, the doctor insisted he was innocent of any crime connected with the disappearance of his wife. We contacted the New York Police Department and asked them to check on Architect Whitmore's friend, Robert E. Rogers. A special detail of men was dispatched to the summer home at Malibu to see what they could find. Half an hour later, Dr. Robert Marston was placed in a car and Ben and I drove him to the Malibu home. We continued questioning him during the drive, but he refused to make a statement of any kind. On our arrival at the beach cottage, we found Marston's young son, Stanley, together with a maid and the family butler. We took Dr. Marston downstairs to the basement. The man had a large section of the cement flooring ripped up. They were digging. In the room up above, we could hear young Stanley Marston playing on a toy harmonica.
I'd like to know something, Sergeant, just for my information.
Yes, sir?
Why do you think I'd kill my wife? Why do you think I'd do such a thing?
We're not sure yet if you did kill her.
And why do you have these men doing this? Digging up the whole basement. Why do you think I killed her? You won't find anything. You might as well tell them to stop now. They won't find anything. I explained everything to you. Why can't you take my word for it?
Well, you still haven't explained about those letters, why you had them sent to New York. Why you had the mail back here one at a time?
Got nothing to do with it. Why can't you believe me?
Your wife didn't disappear without a reason, Doctor, and we'd like to know what the reason is.
I told you a dozen times over. You know what happened. We were at the country club, Louise and I. She was drinking a lot. I told her to lay off. We had an argument. She walked out, that's all. She walked out. I didn't see her anymore.
Yes, sir, we'll have it all worked out. Don't worry about it.
Why can't that maid look after the boy up there? Making all that noise, why can't you take him out somewhere down to the beach?
Romero?
Yeah?
See you a minute.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Sergeant, what do you want me to say?
What's that?
They've found her, you know that. Louise, right where I buried her. What do you want me to say?
Well, that's up to you.
Yes, you wouldn't understand, would you, Sergeant? The only thing I ever wanted in my life. She wouldn't let me have it. The building. Robert A. Marston Building. For professional men.
You mean your wife wouldn't give you the money for it? That's why you quarreled, is that it?
I tried to tell her. There's one fight after another. She didn't know how much it meant to me.
And that's why you killed her, huh?
I followed her outside the country club that night. Drove her to my office. She was pretty drunk.
Mm-hmm.
We pretended she was on a trip to New York. I had her write the letters. Had her sign the receipt for the bonds. Wasn't hard to do.
How'd you kill her?
Put my hands around her throat. Didn't stop until she was dead.
Joe?
Yeah, man.
Hey, Fonder. You ready to go, Doctor?
All right. It was a dream of a lifetime, Sergeant. I almost had it. The Robert A. Marston Building. Finest in the city.
Yeah. You want to come upstairs, Doctor? We'll get you a coat.
You'll try to understand, won't you? I wanted something that'd last. My own building. My name on it. Something you'd remember.
Yeah.
That's the reason I killed Louise. She didn't want me to have it. My own building. Something that would last. Make the people remember.
Well, you made it, Doctor. Why worry?
What?
You don't need a building. They'll remember you.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent. On June 3rd, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
And now here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, our latest sales figures indicate that Fatima is undoubtedly the fastest-growing long cigarette in the country. And I'm sure you'll agree that there must be a sound reason for Fatima's ever-increasing popularity. Well, to my way of thinking, that reason can be summed up in just two words, Fatima quality. You'll spot it instantly. Fatima gives you all the advantages of extra length plus Fatima quality, which no other king-size cigarette has. So tomorrow, buy a pack of Fatimas and prove to yourself that the difference is quality.
Robert Alexander Marston was charged with murder in the first degree. 10 days after his trial opened in Superior Court, the suspect took his own life in his jail cell by hanging. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Stay tuned for Counter Spy next over most NBC stations.
There's more from Philip Marlowe, Dragnet, Case Closed, and all of the other Relic Radio shows at relicradio.com. There's also a Shoutcast stream there with even more to listen to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Enough to fill up your days and all made possible by your support. If you'd like to help out, visit donate.relicradio.com or click on one of the links on the website. You can't do it without your help. Thanks to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.